Now in the front court, Brockman. Burks will line up another one. Hits another one. Caleb Burks is on fire. His fourth triple. He has 12 of Beloit's 25. Timeout, Buffaloes.
Beloit girls and boys win convincingly for the most part last night in Belleville against Republic County. Girls win 51-40, and as you saw there, or heard there, the boys win 57-33 in the girls' game. Republic County now 0-13 on year, had the best offense output of the year, led 15-9 over Beloit. Lady Trojans got a 16-0 run, led by 10, go on to win it by 11. It was down to 7 with 2:46 to go. Beloit forces 29 Buffalo turnovers. Buffalo's led by Avery Stent with 15, a freshman, and junior Emily Hansen had 14 and 3 threes. Beloit led by Addie Budke with 17, matching a career high 10 for Tatum Tejans-Peters, including a couple of threes, 11 points for Peyton Remus. Beloit girls now 8-7 overall, 5-1 in league play. They win 51-40 over Republic County. And the boys' game, Beloit down 4-3, gone 11-0 run, and controlled the game. From then on out, there was never a serious run made by Republic County. Buffaloes fall to 6-7, 2-4 in league play. And Beloit now 10-5, snap a three-game skid there, 4-2 in league play. Beloit led by Caleb Burks, the senior guard, with a career-high 22. He had 4 3-pointers. Wyatt Brockman chipped in with 12, 11 for Bryce Beisner as Beloit wins it easily, 57-33. Dusty had games last night on Katy Country 94.
Yeah, we had Sylvan Lucas at Rock Hills as the Mustangs get the sweep. The Lady Mustangs winning over the Lady Grizzlies by a final of 43-28. And in the boys' contest, Sylvan Lucas winning 69-31. The girls' game actually a tight one after one. It's 12-8 Sylvan Lucas, and then the Lady Mustangs took an 11-point lead at halftime, 28-17. Extended that out to 15 by the end of it. Keely Kenobi, a co-athlete of the game from S&S Drug and Home Health in Beloit. She had 18 points, including 4 3-pointers for Sylvan Lucas in the contest. And the Lady Mustangs are now 12-2, 5-0 in the Northern Plains League with that win. Rock Hills dropping to 7-7 and 4-2 in league play. Also a co-athlete of the game for the Lady Grizzlies, Lauren Welchel had 18 points, as Welchel and Kenobi each had the game high. 18 for Welchel. She included in that was 6 of 9 from the free throw line for Rock Hills in that loss. She actually scored 10 of the 11 second half points for Rock Hills, so they just didn't get enough production offensively from other sources there in the second half to try to compete and get back in it with Sylvan Lucas. Again, the Lady Mustangs won 43-28 in the boys' game. Really not much of a game from the start. Sylvan Lucas just definitely has a lot more experience, and they're at this point a more well-rounded team, clearly, and Sylvan Lucas jumped out to a 20-3 lead at half, 38-12 after three, and then they outscored Rock Hills 29-4 in the third quarter to extend their lead to 67-16. For Rock Hills, it was a positive that they did outscore Sylvan Lucas 15-2 in the fourth quarter. Sylvan Lucas had cleared the bench and let everybody get into the game that was on the roster, and Rock Hills took advantage there in the fourth quarter and picked up 15 points after scoring just 16 through the first three quarters, and that was with a running clock as well. So a little confidence boost there for Rock Hills at the end. Sylvan Lucas is led by William Rudolph and Valden Dole, who each scored 16 points. Rudolph made 4 3-pointers in the first half. He had 14 of his 16 through the first two quarters, and Valden Dole scored 14 of his 16 in the third quarter alone, hit a couple three-pointers, again finishing 16 points, and Rudolph was our athlete of the game from S&S Drug and Home Health in Beloit. Also Rock Hills, nobody in double figures, but they had Wyatt Everett and Cooper McDill each lead their team with 8 points there in the loss. Rock Hills now 2-10 overall, 1-5 in the Northern Plains League. Sylvan Lucas improving to 12-2 and 6-0 in league play. So that's a look at what happened there. Again, the Mustangs getting a sweep over the Grizzlies in Mankato. Other scores from last night in the area, the St. John's Tipton Thunder Ridge games. The girls win, St. John's Tipton win 61-28. Thunder Ridge boys won 55-41. Longhorns led 21-1 after one quarter. Dylan Bynes had 20. Jaden Stauffer, 17. Deshaun Dodd scored 13. Jared Eisman had 14 for St. John's Tipton, and Daniel Eilert added 10 points in the loss for the Blue Jays. On the Lincoln Chase games, Lincoln girls winning 59-37. Chase came back from a deficit after three to win 49-39. Also, it was Concordia over Pike Valley girls 49-36. Concordia boys won 94-35 over Pike Valley. Cav Congren, with 21 points. Tyler Hobrock had 20 for Concordia, their leading scorers. Also, Smith Center girls over Hoxie 50-40. And Hoxie beat Smith Center on the boys' side 48-31. And in a boys-only contest to fill in for games that were lost against Stockton, Ellis was hosting Osborne last night, and Ellis won in that that one 69-66. So let's look at what happened as far as high school hoops are concerned. You can find the full scores from all the area league games that were played there on Tuesday night at ncksports.com. Your home for the latest in sports in North Central Kansas. Again, ncksports.com. Other high school basketball notes, we remind everybody to stay tuned tonight. We have our high school basketball locker room chats. We will talk with the head coaches of Beloit, Osborne, Smith Center, and Thunder Ridge this evening. Those will begin around 5:15 on Katy Country 94 and also online at katycountry94.com. So don't miss our high school basketball locker room chats here this evening. Also at NCKSSports.com, newest rankings have been released by the Kansas Basketball Coaches Association. Smith Center is number 7 in 2A girls this week, and 1A Division 1 girls, Osborne number 6. 1A Division 1 boys, the Bulldogs are number 4 in this week's rankings. And then 1A Division 2 girls, St. John's Tipton, checking in at number 9. Again, you can find those full rankings at NCKSSports.com. Coming up here, if you want to check those out at any point in time. Also, the Kansas Wrestling Coaches Association has their newest rankings out, Class 3-2-1A. Individually, for Beloit, Braden Burks is ranked number 3 at 220 pounds. Also at 138 pounds, Bentley Montgomery of Smith Center ranked number 4 this week. Tate Kittle of Beloit ranked number 5 at 170 pounds. And Brennan Walker, Beloit, is ranked number 5 at 195 pounds. And you can find those full rankings for the Kansas Wrestling Coaches Association as well at ncksports.com. So, again, that's what we've got locally. We do remind everybody that continued high school sports coming up on Fridays. We'll have basketball coverage again on Katy Country 94. It's Ellsworth at Beloit and Z96 Point Through the Lake. We'll have Lakeside hosting Rock Hill. So stay tuned. More high school hoops coming your way. Coming up on Friday night. So that'll catch you up on everything that's going on in the local sports world. And again, always the latest information that you need at ncksports.com.
McCormick, a long, long two. He hit it again. Buried it. He's unconscious. David McCormick has been perfect. 7-for-7 for DMAC.
KU wins last night. No Ochai Agbaji due to having COVID. And we learned about that yesterday on game day. Remy Martin didn't play. And talked to a few KU fans as I was watching JV basketball last night. And they were thinking it was an automatic loss, according to some.
I had a feeling right away, like they're just going to go up and win at Ames, even without Ochai.
That's what I told a few people. I said, listen, Bill Self, in Self you trust. It will find a way to win this game. Yeah. And I said, it'll be Yusefu will probably score 20, and they'll win. Yusefu did a good job, and Jamin Coleman lands against his former team, had opportunity. This team is still deep. It's just that a lot of these guys are just not in the rotation, and they were given an opportunity last night with Martin being hurt and Ochai with COVID. David McCormick, I mean, you needed a good McCormick last night. You got bad McCormick, good McCormick. He had 14 points, 14 rebounds at 31 minutes. DeJuan Harris picked up his scoring, 14 points, 8 assists, 3 steals, and what Bill Self said was probably his best game of the season. Yusefu with 23 minutes off the bench had 7 points, 5 rebounds, 4 assists, and 3 steals, so he filled the stat sheet. KU had tremendous balance when it comes to offense. They had all kinds of problems with turnovers in the first half, but they cleaned that up. KU for the game shot 56% from the floor, 5 of 13 from 3. They had 22 turnovers, but a lot of those in the first half. And and they had a balanced attack. Christian Brown had 13. DeJuan Harris, 14 points on just 8 shots. Jalen Wilson, 13 points. McCormick, the 14 points, 14 rebounds. Coleman Lance had 2 3-pointers. We mentioned Yusefu and what he did. I mean, Kansas did exactly what I thought would possibly happen. And here's the thing that people don't think about when a star player goes out and doesn't play, especially at short notice. Immediately, KU fans are freaking out. Well, we're going to Ames. We're going to lose in Ames. Iowa State's ranked 20th. We got Noah Agbaji. We've been struggling. And Remy's not going to play. Oh, dear, what are we going to do? And I will tell you, there is a human nature, and I've seen it many times in sports in the 26 years I've covered high school and college sports in my lifetime, that what happens is the team that you go up against has a letdown. It's as simple as that. Yeah. And it's only human nature. Iowa State was thinking, dude, we can beat them. 62-61. We almost won at Allen. We had a last-second shot to win it. We're going to beat Kansas. Kansas coming up. They're all psyched and everything. And then news breaks 3 hours before the game. Obagi's not going to play. And you know what your normal human reaction is?
This is going to be easier than I thought.
Oh, this isn't going to be that hard. It's not going to be that hard.
We played with him with Ochai and almost beat him in Lawrence. We can beat these guys without him here.
We should have beat him in Lawrence when they had Ochai, and now they don't have Ochai. Well, we're going to win.
Yeah.
It's just human nature.
It's the exact thing that came into my mind when I heard it. why I said what I said.
So there's two parts to this equation. The first part is the opposing team lets down, which is hard to believe you could let down against a top 10 team in the country. But it's human nature when the opposing team's best player, you sit there and you think, well, you know, just like the fans will think, we're going to win this game. The second part of the equation that people don't think about is that when you lose a player, especially an outstanding player in any sport, you know what typically happens if you're part of a good team? You rally the wagons and you get laser focus from other players. You get super laser focus from your other leaders on the team. And then you get guys that get opportunities that haven't been getting many, like Yusefu, like Coleman Lands, and they come through in flying colors last night. That's the equation. And I'll give you an example. When Patrick Mahomes got hurt in Denver on that Monday night game and dislocated his kneecap and people thought that he tore up his knee, I know I did it right off the bat, thought the season was over. And then Matt Moore, not Chad Henne. Henne was on the IR. Matt Moore, who they got off the street a few weeks prior, Matt Moore was going to be the quarterback. Chiefs fans are like, oh, goodness gracious, our season's over. I mean, Mahomes got to get back as soon as possible. And do you remember how the Chiefs defense played when Mahomes was healthy that year? They gave up a ton of points. Mm. They weren't very good. And then all of a sudden, when Matt Moore became the quarterback, the Chiefs defense improved by quite a bit. You know why? Tyrann Mathieu actually said it. He said, we knew we had to pick the team up because we knew without 15 back there, we're going to be different offensively and we're not going to score as many points. So what did the defense do? They gathered together and they said, listen, we've got to be better. They focused laser focus, whatever you want to call it. I mean, just super focus. And they came together and the Chiefs nearly beat Green Bay and Aaron Rodgers with Matt Moore at quarterback. And they beat the Vikings, who were a playoff team that year. On a last-second field goal, they beat them, and they went 1-1 in Mahomes' two games he missed. Then he came back, and the Chiefs, of course, went on to win the Super Bowl. It happens in football. I've talked about it all the time. People freak out when you lose a star player. The Chiefs lost Travis Kelce for COVID one game. Oh, goodness gracious, what are we going to do offensively? DeMarcus Robinson, Byron Pringle step up. Tyreek Hill had one catch, and the Chiefs obliterated the Steelers the day after Christmas, and Kelce wasn't even available. You see it over and over in sports. You see teams pick up each other. And that combination of other kids getting opportunity, other players getting opportunity, other people rallying on the other side of the ball or other leaders on the team. And Ochai talked to the team apparently the night before and told them, listen, you're good enough to win. You don't need me here. Here's what you need to do. He was leading from afar. Christian Brown talked about it after the game last night. When you deal with adversity, you have to have other people step up. I can talk about locally, you know, for instance, for the Beloit boys. They were without two players against Phillipsburg, all right? Mm-hmm. They were out two players. They were without a starting point guard and a post player, and they won and rallied from a double-digit deficit and had other kids get opportunities to either start or come off the bench, and they did a nice job. And other players picked up their game. Then they went to Hoisington, a game that I think most people figured Beloit fans that Beloit would probably lose because Hoisington was pretty good at the time record-wise, and you're missing your point guard and another guard, so now you're really thin in one position. And there are probably a lot of people thinking Beloit didn't have much of a chance. And what happened? Other kids got an opportunity, made a few plays here and there. You rotate the players in while you can with your bench, and you got some other guys that step up. And next thing you know, you find a way to win. Now, can you do that over the course of an entire season, losing one of your star players? I think it's very, very, very difficult.
Yes.
But in a short period of time, over a span of a week, maybe a couple weeks, whether it's two football games, whether it's a couple basketball games, whether it's a baseball game or a series of three games, you can do it. You can have guys step up. Now, eventually, it might catch up to you. Listen, we've seen it in the National Football League. Trent Green went down. He was a quarterback of the Rams. Kurt Warner came in, and next thing you know, they just took off. If you've seen the movie American Underdog, you know what I'm talking about. That was a guy that was bagging groceries at Hy-Vee, for crying out loud. So they rallied around Kurt Warner, the guy that, according to the movie, Mike Martz didn't even want on the team. They rallied around him, and they were able to win. I'll go back for people that are younger. You're not going to know this, but I'll try to educate you a little bit here because, you know, you learn from history. Phil Sims got hurt for the New York Giants. Jeff Hostler stepped in as a backup quarterback, and Jeff Hostler led the Giants to a Super Bowl win. So sometimes you lose a stud player or one of your leaders or maybe your best player at a position, but you, if you are a deep enough team and you have the right leadership, you have maybe the right coaches in place, you have the right leadership on the floor or on the field, you can overcome these things. And so last night to me, right away I said, watch KU win, and they'll probably win comfortably. I even said that. Mm-hmm. And then I had a couple people question me when I said that, and then I showed the phone to Charlie, who's a KU fan, as he's up on the scoreboard, and I'm like, I winked at him. I said, told you, because it didn't. And KU didn't even play that great first half. They had a lot of turnovers, but they had different people, and then they figured it out in the second half, and they got the job done. So that's a sign of a really good team. That means you have leaders on the floor. You have very good coaching staff, more than likely, and that's why fans should not be in charge of everything, because fans would have immediately forfeited last night because Obagi didn't play. KU actually beat them easier on the road in a hostile environment compared to home, and were without the preseason player of the year didn't play, Remy Martin, and the leader for the Big 12 player of the year and maybe the national player of the year didn't play due to COVID, and KU won by 9 comfortably at Iowa State. So give Bill Self a lot of credit, but also this, you got to give Graceffu credit, Coleman Lands, and anybody else that, you know, Pettifer play a little bit. I mean, anybody that could provide something for them to win a game like that. And now, do I think Saturday they're going to beat Baylor without Ochai? I'm not going to say they can't. They can. Mm-hmm. No doubt they can. I'm going to say the odds aren't as good the second game around now that you've got that first game, and now Baylor's got at least some film to see how these guys work together on the floor at Iowa State. That's the one thing, too, is why does a backup quarterback typically is good for a game or two, and then all of a sudden things go south like you eventually expect it to? Because there's game film on the backup quarterback.
You have good coaches. They figure you out.
You figure out what your tendencies are, all right? Everybody studies each other. You know, Hostetler is a rare example of a backup quarterback going in and doing whatever. You know, Kurt Warner just absolutely played like a Hall of Famer that year, of course. And he had great weapons around him that helped him, too.
So, I think of Nick Foles, too.
That's a great example.
A team that had given up on him once, right? And he left, went to
Kansas
City.
Late in the season, you lose Carson Wentz. Late in the season.
And Carson, I think a lot of people might say, hey, Foles is better than Wentz anyway. So some people might say that, but at the same time, he's like, no. Wentz was having a great year.
He was going to be an MVP.
That's why the Eagles were where they were. And he's a great example, I feel like, of what we're talking about here. This is a team that had given up on him already, traded him away, and then brought him back as a backup. And he took over and ended up being the Super Bowl MVP. So, you know, you do. You have situations. And Foles wasn't Hostetler. He didn't have to go a real long time as a starting quarterback, you know, and run it for forever. But, you know, he kept it steady and was obviously an important part of the Super Bowl. He's the MVP and had the Philly special and caught the touchdown pass. And, you know, that's another example of it where, you know, guys have to step up when people go out and they do it. But, yeah, it's typically a one- or two-game thing. You feel comfortable with it. But then after that, it's like we can't – the Chiefs are not winning, you know, 13, 14 games if Matt Moore's their quarterback.
No,
right?
No way. No way.
For the whole season.
Exactly right. And Kansas without Ochai and Remy Martin, both of them, first, let's say they're out for the rest of the Big 12 season, they're not winning the Big 12 without
them.
Can they win a few games without them? Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Here's Bill Self on the win at Ames.
David was, you know, shot the ball great. Juan made some ridiculously hard layups. But, you know, gosh dang, CB missed an uncontested layup, and Jalen did too there late. But we hung in there. We guarded. We rebounded for the most part the whole game until – Brockington got hot late. I thought we did a real good job on all their individual players too. So it was a good team win.
One thing is, if you have a cold shooting night in basketball, or you're missing a star player who's maybe one of your top scorers, you know what you can always bring? Defense.
Yep.
Effort. Defense can bail you out. Speaking of defense, Texas Tech wins last night. By the way, KU is now 18-3, 7-1 in the Big 12. They have a half game lead over Baylor, and Baylor will come to town. The winner of that game will be in sole possession of first place. Well, if Baylor wins, there could be a tie with somebody else behind them. But KU, basically that's for the lead in the Big 12 coming up Saturday at 2:30 pregame, 3 o'clock tip-off. Baylor at KU this Saturday on Z96.3 The Lake. Iowa State falls to 16-6 overall, 3-6 in Big 12 action. There was a big game after that game last night down at Lubbock, Texas, where Chris Beard is not thought of very highly by Texas Tech students and fans. Yeah, I can't even repeat the things they were saying to him and to his face and what they were chanting last night and everything else. But Tech ended up beating Texas, as many people predicted, by 13.
Carr, with his team down by 13, playing to the last drop, throws it out for Andrew Jones for three, short, 17 seconds left.
Ball game. And just when you think you know the answers, Mark Adams changes the questions. And we've got, okay, here we go. Yeah, ball game.
Texas, the door is on your left. Red Raiders 77, Texas 64.
I don't think that's a bitter rivalry there. The announcer saying, Texas, the door is on your left. And the only thing you could add is don't let the door hit you on the butt on the way out. That was, oh, man, there's some vitriol there.
There's some fresh animosity.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
It's not, I mean, they don't like each other anyway, and then you...
And then you take away their coach, or their coach, you know, deserts them. Which, you know, honestly, I don't blame Chris Beard. He's from Texas, by the way. He's a Texas grad. He went back to alma mater.
Yeah,
I don't blame him. You know, Kay, you know, the same thing. There was a lot of hate out there towards Roy Williams because he went back to North Carolina. I never hated on Roy Williams for doing that. I didn't blame him at all. And now he's finally, you know, eventually been accepted, and everybody's cool with it, and so forth and so on. And for the most part, that's all been mended. And Bill Self said he can come back anytime, and he came back recently this year and got a huge ovation. So, you know, Chris Beard will eventually maybe get that. The only problem is they play each other twice a year, whereas Carolina and Kansas didn't. They weren't in the same conference.
In the tournament.
Roy Williams didn't go to K-State. If Roy Williams went to K-State, then I don't think Roy would have been accepted that great the other day when he was there.
Well, good for Chris Beard is that they're leaving and going to the SEC. So.
That's true. That's very true. K-State in action tonight at 8 o'clock on ESPNU. Both teams, Oklahoma State, K-State, are 10-10. K-State 2-6. O-State is 3-6 in the conference. The keys tonight. To winning against the Cowboys, according to Coach Weber.
You know, we're going to have to, you know, man up, and we're going to have to get some points in the paint. And then obviously it would be nice. It's always nice if you can make some shots. But our defense is going to be key.
Defense is going to be the key for K-State tonight. It's time for K-State in Focus. Our focus on Kansas State athletics, brought to you by Heineken Electric in Beloit and by Hanson Auction Realty in Beloit. So the K-State men in action tonight against Oklahoma State. The K-State women are going to be in action coming up tonight at number 11, Iowa State. The first matchup, Iowa State won on a bank three-pointer with a few seconds remaining in Bramlage. K-State women are 16-5 overall, and they are 6-3 in the Big 12, and there is a battle to win the Big 12 on the women's side. It might be one of the two, if not the best conference in America when it comes to women's basketball, and a good test again tonight as the KU men went to Iowa State last night and won. Now the K-State women will try to go to Iowa State and win, and then the K-State women will host Texas Tech coming up on Saturday night at 6:30. It's National Girls and Women in Sports Day, youth team game going on there at Bramlage, and K-State probably their worst game of the year by far was when they lost at Lubbock a few weeks ago. Texas Tech, not a great team, probably one of the worst teams in the Big 12. So an opportunity there. And then next Wednesday, K-State women go on the road, take on number 9 Baylor, a team that they beat earlier in the year. And then a week from this Saturday, they'll be on the road against the Jayhawks in the Sunflower Showdown. So lots of big games coming up for the K-State women's basketball team. Today is another signing day. I can't keep up with all these signing things with football, but there's apparently more signing.
The thing is, most people do that now during the early period. So right now you're adding just a few people.
Right. It shouldn't be that big a deal, in my opinion. But anyway, there's a whole thing you can read about.
I forgot it was even signing day with everything else going on.
Keep up with signing day. You can follow hashtag K-State football, K-State FB on social media. You can go to the K-State sports website, and you can follow along. Chris Klieman will have a press conference later today at 2 o'clock. That'll be on the K-State sports website. So that's your update on K-State in Focus, brought to you, as always, by Heineken Electric in Beloit and by Hanson Auction Realty in Beloit as well. few stories here to pass along to you in college football. USC has landed a monumental commitment. What a shocker. Star quarterback Caleb Williams is reuniting with Lincoln Riley and going to USC from Oklahoma. Williams was number two quarterback in the 2021 recruiting class before enjoying a breakout freshman season for the Sooners. No big surprise. We had talked about Williams wasn't going back to Oklahoma when he had already went and got a kid from Central Florida that the new offensive coordinator worked with. It's about relationships. Caleb Williams goes to USC. No shocker there. Lane Kiffin had some interesting things to say. I will tell you about Lane Kiffin. Interesting dude. I think he'd be a fascinating guy to have a beer with.
Oh, for sure.
He's never been shy about sharing his opinion. So ahead of National Signing Day, he delivered some strong takes yesterday. When asked about the state of name, image, and likeness deals in NCAA, Kiffin said Ole Miss doesn't have the resources to compete with schools with deeper pockets. Kiffin specifically joked about Texas A&M having to pay a luxury tax for shelling out so much money to recruits. If you don't follow this, Texas A&M has spent a ton of money. Boosters, alum, and now it's basically legal to give these kids money. You know, get set up these deals, this deal. Here's what Lane Kiffin said, and I quote, "We don't have the funding resources as some schools with the name, image, and likeness deals. It's like dealing with salary caps." Kiffin goes on to say that some schools can pay 5 to 10 times more. I joked I didn't know if Texas A&M incurred a luxury tax with how much they paid for their signing class. Kiffin went on to say, somehow they're going to have to control name, image, and likeness. You've got these salary caps. Schools giving players millions to sign before they play in other places are not able to do that. What would the NFL look like if 2 or 3 teams could pay 10 times more in salary cap space? Well, you got to see that in baseball back in the day. So we know how that would work. So very interesting. Kiffin went on to say there are schools with no shot to recruit certain players. If a class has an average of 25 million, that's a million per student or student athlete that you want to go recruit. In NFL free agency, players go to the most money. These players are 17, 18 years of age. They're going to go where they get paid most. You've legalized paying players. End of quote. I think he makes some fair comments. Fair quote. I think they're fair comments and statements by Lane Kiffin, because that was the fear of the NIL before all of this. Was the rich get richer. And now you are starting to see schools start to embrace the advantage they may have. And Texas A&M, who never has the number one class in America, suddenly now it's like the Blue Chips movie where, you know, you get Shaquille O'Neal and Penny Hardaway and everybody else. It's like, how did that happen?
Might as well send them all to Western State and let's do this thing.
Except this time it's like, hey, it's allowed because there's loopholes with this whole thing. There's not really any kind of rules in place with name, image, likeness. The NCAA, again, has failed in so many ways when it comes to all that.
Yeah.
And so, like I said, the cow's out of the barn.
There's so much out there that you can't police with it right now once you've done this.
No doubt.
Like, schools can't pay, but like you act like they can't just say, hey, selected booster, give this guy this money for an ad on at your car dealership.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And the big news in sports yesterday, and I'll be honest with you, I am a little bit surprised somebody hasn't done this already, but it's happening. And if you know anything about Curt Flood, look it up with baseball. Curt Flood changed the way baseball ended up being with free agency and everything else. Former Miami Dolphins head coach Brian Flores, who was fired this offseason, even though he had a winning record, and has been interviewing for several open positions, is suing the National Football League, the New York Giants, the Miami Dolphins, and the Denver Broncos for racial discrimination. The lawsuit filed states that the league remains rife with racism and that in certain critical ways, NFL is racially segregated and is managed much like a plantation. It points out that none of the 32 NFL owners are black and that they profit from the labor of players, 70% of whom are black. Flores said he is deciding to stand up for himself and he hopes others join him. God has gifted me with a special talent to coach the game of football, but the need for change is bigger than my personal goals. In making the decision to file the class action complaint today, I understand that I may be risking coaching the game that I love, and that has done so much for my family and me. My sincere hopes is that by standing up against systemic racism in NFL, others will join me to ensure that positive change is made for generations to come. The class action complaint begins with a text from New England Patriots head coach Bill Belichick, who mistakenly texted Brian Flores thinking he had landed the Giants head coaching job 3 days before Flores even interviewed for it. Belichick apologized, saying he misread the text and that he heard New York was hiring Buffalo Bills offensive coordinator Brian Daboll. So you know, it happens to anybody, even Bill Belichick. You're like, oh, there's two Dustys or there's two Brians, and you think you're talking to this. It's happened to me. I have two very good friends that are Todd, and I've messed up on that before. According to the lawsuit, Flores then had to sit through a sham interview with new general manager Joe Schoen, which Flores representatives say was only held in an effort to comply with the Rooney Rule, which requires teams to interview minority candidates for head coaching and senior operation positions. Daboll was hired as Giants head coach on January 28th. So Bill Belichick already knew that the Bills were going to hire Brian Daboll, and the Bills then went ahead and interviewed Brian Flores, knowing they already were giving the job to Brian Daboll, only because they had to comply with the rules. So it was a token or a sham interview. Now, some people will argue, and I've heard this, well, that gives you experience to have an interview, even though you're not going to get the job, get the experience of an interview. Brian Flores doesn't need more experiences with interviews. This isn't his first. I mean, he already was a head coach and a successful head coach at that with the Miami Dolphins. And then, you know, somebody sent me a deal and said, you know, I don't know how this is racism. Their general manager of the Dolphins is black. I said, you don't have to be white to be racist. I mean, let's think about that. It's a little tone deaf, isn't it? You can be racist whether you know, you can be black and be racist. You can be white and you can be racist. You can be a very super religious person and be racist. You can be a woman and be racist. You can be a man and be racist. You can be a teenager and be racist. I mean, you can be – racism isn't just stuck on one color of skin. Racism can work all the way around. Discrimination can work all the way around. Whether this is all – if this is about racism, I'm not positive it is or it isn't. But there's some kind of discrimination here. I don't think there's any doubt. I mean, we talked about it. Going into the NFL offseason, 32 NFL coaches and only one is black. After the firings that have happened – recently, Mike Tomlin is the only black coach in the National Football League. Now, there are black candidates up for opening vacancies, all right? You don't have a lot of black men or women that are in the higher-ups as GMs. You got Ryan Poles now, who's going to be with the Bears. That's one. And you don't have any black owners. Michael Jordan is the owner of the Charlotte Hornets. There's not a lot of black owners in any professional sport, to be quite honest with you. Now, part of that might be that there's just not enough black men or women that have the capital and the money to buy teams, or they are being discriminated against and are being shut out. I don't know what's true, but I do know that it is pretty amazing that there is only one NFL coach until recent hires. I may have missed one or two here recently, but that there's only one black coach, and that's Mike Tomlin, who has been very successful. And Brian Flores was successful. And we talked about over and over, you get retread coaches that happen to be white. You don't usually get a lot of retread coaches that happen to be black. You can try to connect the dots all you want. Say that's discrimination. Maybe you say, well, you know, the guys that are black are not good interviewing again. Or you can put anything you want to say against people, whether they're black or white. But no, you do not have to be white to be racist. You could be a black general manager in a sport and you could be racist, whether it's to other black people or whether it's to white people. You can be discriminatory. You can be racist. All right. And so it's a very interesting lawsuit here, and it could be a game changer. The NFL is vehemently denying all this. Of course, the Broncos vehemently denying this as well. I think I read a story where John Elway showed up an hour late to the interview that Brian Flores had with the Broncos. That's insulting. I don't think Elway would do that. If he was going to hire a certain coach, do you think he'd show up an hour late? That means that he really wasn't thinking Flores was going to get the job anyway. That's a story I read. Whether it's true or not, I don't know. But it's a big story, and it'll be interesting to follow. And Brian Flores is putting his career in jeopardy. There's no doubt about it. But you know what? If he has the convictions to do it, I say go for it.
Yeah, this is a point where somebody's got to stand up and take that fall, you know?
Rosa Parks at one point had to stand up, right, on a bus.
Yeah.
Martin Luther King had to stand up for stuff. And it's not just black men or women, or we've had women that had to stand up for their rights. You know, you could go on and on about how many different people, whether it's somebody that's Jewish that had to stand up for their rights, or if somebody that is of this descent or that descent, or whether you're Hispanic or whether you're a minority, or whether you can go on and on and on. But at some point, somebody has to step up for movement to happen, for change to happen, somebody's got to step up.
If it's something that he genuinely feels is a problem for people in the future that want to have these opportunities, and he feels like, hey, I've had my opportunity, and it looks like these people aren't taking me seriously right now, and we tip them over the edge, right? And this is his way of doing it. You know, there might have been a better way for him to do it to make sure he might have another chance later on to get another job, but this is how he felt he had to go about it. And I mean, kudos to him for being that guy that will put it on the line to do it, you know?
I just don't think you make up stuff and sabotage your career on purpose.
No.
I would think there's where there's smoke, there's fire. And I don't doubt that some of this is true, if not most of it.
Yeah.
We shall see how it plays out. Huge story. Huge story.